Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So of the 13 people who died as a result of Hurricane Ida in New York City, 11 died in flooded basements. These tragic deaths have brought renewed attention to the unregulated and precarious conditions many low-income New Yorkers face in underground dwellings. I think you know that by now after the storm. But in a city with such a dire shortage of affordable housing, these illegal basement units fill an urgent need for people who may not have other options. So it's urgent that we look a little more closely now that we have basically dug out from the storm and don't have to report on the emergency recovery. And we can ask what to do about these basement apartments and how to prevent them from becoming deadly in an era of intensifying rainstorms. With me now are Rebecca Morris, urban planner and senior program manager at the Pratt Center for Community Development, and Reza Khanbilvardi, professor of civil engineering at City College and director of the CUNY Remote Sensing Earth Institute. He's also a licensed professional engineer in New York State. So good morning, Rebecca. Good morning, Reza. Thank you so much for coming on WNYC.
Good morning. Thank you.
And listeners, we will open our lines to anyone who lives in a basement apartment or rents one out. 646-435-7280. Tell us about your situation. What are the risks of living or renting where you do? How did you manage during Hurricane Ida? What do you want to say about the infrastructure, drainage, or anything else? You have enough exits to get out of your place? And what do you think would improve your housing conditions if they need improving? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280 for anyone who lives in or rents out a basement apartment, or you can tweet at Brian Lehrer. Rebecca, do you want to start by describing the threat to the most vulnerable basement units and what makes some more vulnerable than others to big rainstorms?
Sure. So I'd like to just start by saying that what happened is a really big tragedy. As part of the Basement Apartment Safe for Everyone Coalition, we've been working for 10 plus years on trying to get the attention of the city to acknowledge that people are living in these spaces and that we need to really think about how to make them safe so tragedies like this don't happen. And currently there is a pilot in East New York that is working to do just that. However, it has been defunded by the mayor. And so what has typically been considered safety problems has been around fire, not so much flooding, right? Because the idea was we just don't build these in floodplains, right? That was the main rule is you just don't build in the 100-year floodplain. Mm-hmm. But because of climate change, obviously we're seeing that's completely, our understanding of what's going to flood has completely changed. And so there is a need now to really reassess and look at sort of what the safety measures are that can be done to keep these places safe during floods. But the idea of not doing anything and just trying to kick people out, I think, is unrealistic because people live there. Even there's just not enough housing in New York City.
Exactly. Reza, anything to add about what in particular makes particular units unsafe? And I guess we should say that not all basement apartments are illegal. And are the legal ones any safer than the illegal ones in general?
Well, I mean, one of the important criteria for floods is really elevation. And if the buildings or the house is located in the low-end area, obviously they will be receiving a lot of runoff that's coming from the neighborhood. So that's one of the key the elements of it. The other one is really there is a difference between basement and the cellar. And a lot of illegal rentals are really probably are in the cellar area. Cellar is not supposed to be a living space as defined by the Department of Buildings. Cellar are those that they are 60% or more or 50% or more below ground. So there is the majority of the unit is really underground. Basement, on the other hand, they are more above grounds and so there are more means of egress. So there is less danger for the basement than cellar in terms of the type of the building that they are. And the location, obviously, important and existing of stormwater collection system in the vicinity of those neighborhood are a critical area for controlling the floods.
That's a distinction I never heard before between a basement and apartment and a cellar apartment. Reza, is that a legal distinction in the eyes of the city as well?
Correct. New York City law prohibits living in a cellar.
Interesting. And Rebecca, where are the units most likely to be found that are either basements or cellars? And do you make that distinction too? And does the city have any idea of exactly how many there are across the five boroughs?
So most of these units, so like the community partners that I work with that are on the ground, Queens Legal Service, China CDC, Cypress Hills LDC, right? A lot of them and a bunch of other organizations, the homeowners and tenants they typically find that come to them to ask questions about basements are in Queens. Queens is a big area, Brooklyn, little part of the Bronx, maybe a little part of Staten Island, but typically these sort of one and two family buildings, right, with smaller homeowners that are looking for some extra rent to help them pay the bills. So the cellar versus basement distinction is there. I think that it's a little bit, I'm not sure what the right word is, but it could be mere inches determining the difference. And mm-hmm. So one of the things that the pilot and has been looking at and what sort of we've been arguing as advocates is that, you know, this is really a building by building thing, and you need to go in and sort of see what the potential is, because it could be possible that a basement doesn't have the opportunity to have all of the egress required, but maybe a cellar, which is defined as a cellar, is only 1 or 2 inches below the 50% curb mark, could, right? And so we really need to be getting into these units, seeing what's going on, working with architects to come up with like appropriate design features to make them safe.
Interesting. Let's take a phone call. Our first caller, Meg in Hightstown, New Jersey, who says her daughter lives in a cellar apartment. Hi, Meg. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, my daughter lives in an apartment in Crown Heights. They have the first floor, which is a few steps up from the sidewalk. And then there is a cellar part of their apartment, which has a bedroom, a half bath, and their living area. They were flooded by Ida. They flooded again 2 days later. And Tuesday, they had sewerage in their apartment in the cellar. Now, I went online and looked at the C of O, and it's classified as a cellar. And it says that it's a boiler room, storage, and accessory use. Now, I don't know what accessory use is. But I always questioned the fact that there was a bedroom down there without a window you could get out of.
Without a window you could get out of.
Yeah, there's a door that goes to a common area. But I just thought this was a terrible idea for them to rent this apartment.
Yeah. Did they come home with you now?
No. Actually, they're living with friends, but they're really... they don't want to go back. The place smells terrible. Yeah. They've already been dealing with moisture and mold. And my husband said, you know, should they be legally paying rent for this space?
Is it a legal space, to your knowledge?
Well, the apartment itself is. Upstairs, they have a kitchen eating area, two bedrooms, and a full bath.
I see.
And there is a wrought iron spiral staircase that goes down to the cellar, which has a living area that's got a linoleum floor. But there's a bedroom down there that has a little tiny window. None of the windows open, but there is a door that goes to this common space where the washers and dryers are.
Meg, thank you so much for your call. And Reza, with your engineering experience, let me go to a couple of things that she raised there, and I referenced them briefly in the intro to the segment. One, the fact that it was sewage that backed up, not just water, does that indicate that drainage is an issue we should be talking about in these buildings' construction? And also, no openable window, just a door that would lead, I guess, upstairs. Are multiple exits something that are in the building code that make some of these cellar apartments illegal? Lack of multiple exits.
The one thing that she mentioned the word certificate of occupancy, CFO of the building. Every building has a certificate of occupancy, and it clearly indicates what's the use of the basement or cellar for that building is. So if it says boiler room and utility and accessory, that means storage type things, this is not a rentable unit, as the CEO does not indicate it's a living space. That's number one. Number two, you talk about the sewer backup. We have to understand the majority of the stormwater collection system in New York City are combined sewer system, which means the stormwater are being collected at some point. It's connected to sewer system, which is also running the underground for buildings. If there is a major storm coming and the rainfall is going to be exceeding certain value, the majority of those system are going to be occupied by the stormwater runoff. And as a result, the sewer system is going to back up and is going to flow off the system because there is no room to go to. And also the location. As I indicated, the lower floors are very vulnerable because as the soil gets saturated and the sewer system is not cannot find a way to go to the sewer system connections, they are going to be backed up. Now, the windows are very small. Again, those are the sign of cellar. Cellar being the majority of the unit is underground. The windows are small. Normally, the windows are close to the ceiling rather than to be, you know, at the lower elevation. Mm-hmm. So it becomes very difficult for anybody to get out with those small windows. And normally, they don't have a second means of egress, which is just in case one of the, you know, entrances to the basement or cellar are being filled with the storm runoff, they can't get out. You know, there is no way to get out from the window or from the same exit unless there are two exits. That helps when they have two means of egress.
Is that part of what makes a unit legal versus illegal?
No, but that it helps. And I agree with Rebecca that mentioned that each building, each house, their own characteristic, and they have to be checked upon it because the directions of the entrance to the basement, which normally there is a side door to the basement or a back door to the basement or front door, is very critical. When the severe storm either, the runoff is really coming from the streets. The majority of the time comes from the streets. Mm-hmm. And from impervious areas that they have, and the soil is saturated, they cannot take the runoff, the infiltration anymore, so everything becomes runoff in a very short time. So the location of the entrance basement become critical because if the entrance to the basement is in the path of that runoff, quickly are going to be filled up with the water coming from the street or from the surrounding area.
Yeah, and I guess yet another barrier to exiting through those windows would be that in New York City, a lot of first floor or ground level windows have bars on them so people don't break in. You know, I invited people who live in or rent out basement apartments to call in, and I didn't think to invite people from the construction industry who might have a relevant viewpoint on this. But somebody like that is calling in. It's Aaron in Schenectady. So, Aaron, we really appreciate it. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Nice to speak with you again. I still listen. I left the Brooklyn Navy Yard when they raised my rent 60%, but it wasn't the only reason. I was asked to build illegal basement apartments. I was asked to break every term of my license by homeowners. I was a worker, too, and I had to leave my home in New York City. Mm-hmm. I landed on my feet, and I can afford to tell you this because I didn't break the law. I did not break the law. But if I hadn't built illegal, when I didn't do illegal work, when I didn't renovate basements and cellars, someone else did. And I was told over and over again that if I was following labor law, I wasn't doing it right. If I was working by check or depositing the money in a bank account, I wasn't doing it right. Over and over again, the licensing program, homeowners believe, is to protect them from high prices. the licensing program actually is designed to follow the law. We have to follow the law as licensed contractors.
But talk a little bit more, and Aaron, we're running a little short on time, so let me get you to a particular point to follow up on something that you said that I think is really important. That is, if I understood you right, as a contractor, you are refusing to build illegal basement or cellar apartments into people's homes. But part of your point here, I think, is that there was a lot of demand, and there is a lot of demand to do that, right?
Yeah, homeowners have power in this equation. These are property owners, and we're workers, and the people who own properties in New York City, even in poor neighborhoods, are relatively wealthy compared to where I live. The city protects property owners from workers in regard to who does this work.
Aaron, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate your contribution. So, Rebecca, that brings us to the legal questions. We've talked so much in this segment about the landscape, and I think it's been useful for people who are not involved in this personally to hear what the basement apartment landscape in New York is like. Now we have what to do to prevent a repeat of this tragedy. And Mayor de Blasio's administration launched a program aimed at bringing basement apartments up to code and making them safe for habitation. But Rebecca, I understand you think that program sort of faltered, right?
Well, first of all, I'd like to push back on the comment by the last caller that most of these homeowners are wealthy. So a lot of these homeowners are not wealthy. They are living in low and moderate income communities, and they need this, maybe they bought the house with the understanding whoever sold it to them that they would be able to rent this unit to help them pay for their mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So,
fair enough.
You know, it is, right? So I just wanted to make that point. But in terms of whether I think that it faltered, if this is a very, very complex problem, right? You have the interplay of zoning codes and building codes and the housing crisis, right? And now we have the climate crisis. There's a lot going on here. It's going to be complicated to solve, but we have to be able to do hard things. We have an enormous housing crisis here. And the pilot was a hard fought for and won by advocates on the ground for years pushing for this. And we won the pilot. There was like 3 years of a task force working together with all these different city agencies and advocates and homeowners to come up with a pilot that can test a safe way to make sure that people can live in these and be safe and healthy. And, you know, there was a ton of demand in East New York, ton of demand. Hundreds of homeowners came out. They wanted to do this. And, the mayor's line has been that it was way too hard logistically, except the problem is that they cut almost 90% of the funding before we even got to get through the pilot to test actually if it works or not, right? Mm-hmm, so first of all, it's still going on, but you only have 8 homeowners. It was the neighborhood was promised 40. The reminder, this was a promise to the neighborhood when they rezoned East New York. And so it's only the problem that I see and that a lot of us see that are working on this day to day is that when if you don't put the money and you don't have the political will to actually do the hard work, then it's easy to say it's logistically challenging.
So for you at the Pratt Center for Community Development, are there a set of policies that you're recommending in response to the 11 deaths in basement apartments during Hurricane Ida, or are the laws already in place and they just need to be enforced?
No, I think it's a mix, right? So nobody, like not even all of the experts, you know, in city agencies were thinking about flooding when this pilot was created, right? Everyone was thinking about fire safety. And the idea was that, you know, you just dampen waterproof, depending on what the subsoil conditions are for the unit, and you don't build in a floodplain. And so this is one of those moments where, because it's a pilot, right? Here's an opportunity to say, okay, we really do actually need to think more about what needs to happen in terms of flood safety. And not just with basements, but like, let's talk about like garden apartments and first floor apartments. Like this, what clearly this showed was that like, we don't exactly know what's going to happen now with climate change. Nobody was prepared for it. What's going on with our infrastructure? There's a lot of challenges, but I think that, you know, the base campaign is currently working with, you know, technical experts, architects, engineers, trying to figure out what are some solutions that can be integrated into a model that can continue to make these units safe.
You mentioned garden apartments, and I think we have someone calling about a brownstone garden apartment and that sector of housing. Elliot in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hello, Brian. How are you today?
Good. What's
your name? I live in a brownstone in the Lincoln Center Historic District. And over the years, landlords, as part of the overall drive to push rent-stabilized units into the open market, have been duplexing. They've been building up on the roof and building down into the cellar. And the two neighboring apartments on my floor, the basement floor, below stoop level, have been duplexed down. The service staircase into the cellar is an old, battered wooden staircase. It does not meet fire safety codes. These extra rooms that have been added on paper in the process of the city are called recreation rooms, and yet people are sleeping in them. They do not meet fire codes. And in fact, I was running an errand one day, and two gentlemen passed me going in the other direction, one with a clipboard, one with a badge, and I thought, wait a minute. I turned around and hurried back. I said, excuse me, are you from fire department? And one was from building and one was from fire, and they were walking around the neighborhood looking at the fire escape situation and these conversions, because the codes are not keeping up with what building owners and landlords are doing.
Oh, that's such a revealing story. I'm going to leave it there for time. But even in the Lincoln Center historical brownstone districts, but raise us some of these units, which are illegal and have been illegal for years, are a function of the housing crisis, right? Which will always relegate people without means into dwellings like these units until there's significant change in New York City. In the meantime, what can be done to mitigate the risk of severe flooding in basement units, or what do you think the big picture is? Because there's a basic tension here between not having things that are unsafe because they're illegal, but at the same time trying to have enough housing for, you know, the lower income immigrant population in particular and others who need housing in the permanent housing shortage condition of New York City.
Well, I mean, the answer to your question is really twofold. What can we do to mitigate the flooding in the basements or cellar apartments? That's number one. And number two, a bigger picture is, what can we do to mitigate the flooding or stormwater management in the system in the New York City areas, especially in the neighborhood that they are in the lower elevation? Rebecca mentioned climate change. I mean, the climate change is causing the increase in frequency and the magnitude of precipitation. The existing code for stormwater collection system in the city is based on what we call it the intensity, duration, frequency curves, which is really a history of the rainfall that has come in New York City for a long, long time. They do the analysis and they find, you know, what's the highest rainfall that comes once every 5 years. I mean, this rainfall intensity duration curve has changed in the last few years with the climate changes. But our code has not changed, has not kept up. In certain area, they go for 3 year storm return period. But you notice in the last month, we had two or three major precipitation that exceeded those the 5 year return period or 3 year return period. Right. So we really have to upgrade our storm water collection system. And we can also retrofit some of the existing building that they are already there. And in terms of finding a better way of maybe diverging the runoff that is coming to the building, or maybe for a temporary barrier or sandbags, or even a sloping sidewalk on the next door to the entrance of the buildings. Also moving some of the, what you call the utility line from the basement to higher elevation. Normally electrical outlets, the meters and the gas meters, everything is on the basement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you move it up to higher elevation, at least you are not going to lose your electricity, your pumping, your sump pump is going to work, everything else is going to work out. More importantly, we have to increase our capability in forecasting. I mean, our forecasting has improved a lot in precipitation, but not to the local place. Example, we say Brooklyn is going to get 3.5 inches tomorrow or 2.2 inches, but not everywhere in 2.2 inches are going
That's
to come
right.
in Brooklyn.
Yeah, hyper-local.
So what we need in forecasting, we need in now casting.
Let me do the legal ID that I need to do near the top of the hour, and I want to ask you a follow-up question about one piece of that that I think is really interesting. Then we'll give Rebecca a last word. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Raisa, you're saying that the buildings themselves need to be upgraded in some cases for protection in the current climate era. But you also said that the basic infrastructure, if I understand you right, of New York City, the whole sewage system, needs to be upgraded in terms of the municipal infrastructure. For you as an engineer, how big a job is that?
That's major job and major investment on part of the city and agencies. And we are not talking about the entire system. We are talking about areas that they are vulnerable to floods. Maybe they can create an auxiliary stormwater collection system for those areas, or maybe they can design a retention basin for the runoff that doesn't, you know, all the runoff doesn't come at the same time, so that there is a delay in runoff. So there are a number of ways that they can do on certain location for some of those communities to alleviate the problem.
Rebecca, last thing. How can folks get help if they're still cleaning up or assessing the damage from Ida, if you know?
Well, I think you should look to your local community-based organization. They tend to have and understand the lowest local resources on the ground. But I do think that this points to the need for us to really build out the social infrastructure of the city and the local community resilience, educating people about sort of what climate change could bring, how to make sure that they're connected into sort of emergency response notifications, and lastly, rather than making homeowners more scared to, you know, to come and look to see how to make it legal, let's find an avenue to make it so people come and ask for the help they can to make these spaces safe.
A great way to end. Rebecca Morris, urban planner and senior program manager at the Pratt Center for Community Development, and Raisa Campbell-Vardy, professor of civil engineering at City College. Thank you both so much for an important segment.
Thank you
so much.